The Real Hero Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Real Hero Podcast, everybody. And for those of you who are new here, my name is Andrew Winters, and I'm the host of the podcast. Now, everyone is the main character in their own life story, and you have a choice to become better than who you were yesterday. Grow your mind, body, wallet, and imagination with the Real Hero Podcast. In today's episode of the podcast, I have a very interesting guest here with me today who's interviewed many social entrepreneurs who have made an impact on this planet. Now, during the podcast, I did talk about what he has done, but I do want to break down a little bit about who he is, what he's accomplished, and what we're going to be speaking about today. Now, my guest was a successful Fortune 500 executive, a business coach, created his own podcast known as The Social Entrepreneur. He's a keynote speaker, a best-selling author, and he was a TEDx speaker. He's an individual that helps purpose-driven leaders, change makers, thrive in life, connect, and contribute to the world. Tony Lloyd, everybody. Now, Tony's going to be discussing his background story while he was an executive working for the Fortune 500 and transitioning into where he is today and the lessons that he's learned. He's going to be talking about the hundreds of social entrepreneurs that he interviewed and how that you can apply what he has learned to your life. Tony's going to share some amazing stories that will change your perspective, your outlook on life, and what you can be doing. He's going to be discussing finding purpose with work and how we can bring meaning to where we work so we can not just only make money, but make money while finding meaning and contributing. All right, guys, well, let's jump right into the podcast.
How's everything going? I know this is our first time e-meeting.
I'm well.
Yeah, it is a pretty strange time to be alive right now. I was actually just talking about this with a friend of mine. I've been looking forward to interviewing you and talking with you, especially after watching some of your or listening to some of your own podcasts. He was a former successful Fortune 500 executive. He's a business coach. He created his own podcast known as The Social Entrepreneur. He's a keynote speaker, a best-selling author. He was a TEDx speaker. And let's not forget, he is someone who helps purpose-driven leaders thrive in life. Tony Lloyd, everybody.
Yeah. And the crowd goes wild.
Yeah,
you just had a very impressive background. And I talk about this a lot about, of course, about like how one day I would love them. One of my passions, of course, is to help others. And this gives me an outlet to do that. And I would love to do public speaking one day and become a keynote speaker at one point. And I'm learning the skills slowly and surely, one day at a time. But I definitely look up to you in many regards of like with what you do, not just as an individual, but as your brand, your company.
I appreciate that you are a public speaker. If you think about, you know, the thousands of people who download your podcast, if somebody said, hey, can you come to this auditorium and talk to thousands, do it, right? It'd be, you know, great public speaking opportunity. Well, you're doing it already. You're just doing it with a podcast.
You're not wrong there when you think of it. I guess it's just perspective.
Right.
For those of you who don't know you, and I mentioned this before, that you are a former Fortune 500 executive. Do you mind going over that journey of yours pre what you were doing now?
Yeah. Yeah. And by the way, we're getting a lot of dropouts. So if you need me to turn off my camera or do anything to kind of drop out from happening, I'll be glad to do it. But let's try it this way. And then if we need to adjust, let me know.
Yeah.
I was really lucky. You know, sometimes I call myself the Forrest Gump of business because it's kind of like cool things and fun things happen to me. And it's like, wow, look what just happened, right? So so I had an opportunity, technical career, sort of a very engineering kind of career. And then I turned that into training people about that technical stuff. And then I managing training departments. And eventually, I was doing some consulting work with a company called John Deere. and John Deere agricultural equipment, construction equipment. They make OEM engines that go into other people's equipment. So I was interviewing with them and they work with them and they recruited me in. So that kind of got me into the Fortune 500 executive world, where I, you know, went from being a manager to eventually a vice president in several companies as I made the leap from company to company. And then in 2015 ago, I just decided that was fun. I really enjoyed that, but it was time for me to go do something else. And so I went, and since then, like you said, I'm an author, I'm a speaker, I'm a coach, I produce podcasts, and so that's what I'm doing now.
Funny enough, I actually have this John Deere hat my dad gave me that I wear all the time. So I do like that company a lot, and their brand.
Nothing runs like a deer, right?
Yeah, exactly. You got that right. You're not wrong there. Yeah. But transitioning into that, you know, post period of 2014 after, the Fortune 500 executive, like, did you just feel like you were complacent in life? Like you were doing well and you feel like you needed more? Is that what kind of like led to that transition?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd describe it as complacent. I would describe it more as, there's a guy named Daniel Pink. And a few years ago, he wrote a book called Drive.
Yeah.
And there are three things that motivate people. It is autonomy, purpose, and mastery. Right. So I had a lot of autonomy because I was an executive, big decisions and move teams in lots of directions. I was achieving mastery in a lot of things. I was always learning something new. We were always with some brand new, a lot of sort of learning and growing and mastery. But when it came to being aligned with my personal values and my purpose in life, I just didn't. And so I felt like it was time for me to make the shift. And, you know, I had great opportunities. It was amazing. I got paid lots of money to be in a Fortune 500 company. And everything I'm saying now, I'm saying from a position of privilege, right? So not quit their day job and go do something else, but I had that opportunity. And so I took advantage.
I respect that a lot. Yeah, I guess complacent wasn't the right word. It was, like you said, aligning with your values and your purpose. You were expanding, creating, and that's what you wanted to do. And I respect that a lot. That was the kind of path that I was formerly on, and I'm transitioning into a different path in my life. But speaking about that kind of stuff, I know you interview many different type of, change makers, as you like to call them, and which I respect a lot. They're not just there for the money, but they're also trying to find meaning and contribute in their life. And I just actually got done listening to one of your podcasts with Sebastian at ArcLight. Very interesting to me, by the way, just because I have a biology background, and I just genuinely found, you know, the science behind it very interesting. And what exactly did you learn from these people that you interviewed? Because you say they're ordinary people who are making a difference.
Right. You know, and it goes back to the name of your podcast, right? The Real Hero. And so, yeah, I know that we're all heroic, right? We are the hero of our journey. And the saying is, we are the ones that we have been waiting for, right? Oh. They took the opportunity to take action. A few years ago, well, let me back up for a second. So at the end of the podcast episode, I asked the entrepreneurs to give me their best piece of advice. So what's one thing that you would pass along who aspire to be social entrepreneurs? And a social entrepreneur makes a dollar and they make a difference, right? They make money, but money isn't. And so I asked them, so if somebody else wanted to be a social entrepreneur, what's your best piece of advice? And after 150 episodes, I began to think, you know, I think I'm hearing the same pieces of advice again and again. So what are those keys? So being, you know, I'm a spreadsheet geek, right? So yeah. I love spreadsheets. So I took all the keeps and I put them into a spreadsheet. And then in the next column over, I just put a category. I said, you know, this feels like about starting, or this feels a little bit about growth, or this feels a little bit like, and so I went through and put in whatever the category was, and at the end of that first 150 episodes, and I found that there were only 10 key pieces of advice that were given again and again and again. So based on that, then in 2017, I wrote a book, and it's called Crazy Good Advice, 10 Lessons Learned from 100 Social Entrepreneurs. Wow. And it's really, it's a lot of fun. It's full of stories. My wife illustrated it. It's got all kinds of great graphics in it. It's a really fun book. But, you know, if I could take the entire book, so now I've got, you know, 150 people who've given their best advice, down to the top 10 pieces. And then if I could take all those 10 pieces and sort of mash them up and crunch them up and put them into one, what would that be? And so for me, what I really learned from them is, first of all, just start, right? That there's something that happens when you just start. And so we've developed this phrase that I say a lot, and it may be, I don't know, maybe I'll write a book about it someday, but it is, miracles find you while you're in motion. So it's like there are these little chances or coincidentity or synchronicity or whatever name you want to give it. So there are all these little coincidences that are out there. But as long as you're sitting still on your sofa and sitting on your hands, they can't really find you or see you. It's the minute that you stand up from your sofa and you start run into these little moments of serendipity. There are these synchronicity collisions that happen. And so key thing that I've been learning from these social entrepreneurs.
You know, there was a quote, I don't remember who said it. I'll have to put it in the show notes. But, you know, it went something along the lines of the best time to start was like 23 years ago or something like that. And there's never a better, you know, there's no right time. There's no perfect time. I think whatever you have in mind or whatever you want to begin, just start it. You know, I think there's another quote, launch first and adjust fast. So whatever you do, do it and adjust right while you're doing it. So I completely agree with that philosophy based on the people that you talk with, these social entrepreneurs. You mentioned before that success leaves clues. Do you mind going over what exactly that means?
You know, as you look at these different people, they all seem to have followed some kind of, right? So let me give you a few examples of this. So one of the key things that successful entrepreneurs do is empathy, right? So they find someone to serve, and then they spend a day in the life, and maybe they spend the life, or maybe they spend 60 days in the life, but they do something to really embed themselves into this person's problems so that they really understand assets that person has, that kind of person has, and what are the problems that they face. And, you know, I could give you a lot of examples of that, but I was talking to someone who she was, you know, at Harvard University, and you would think, you know, ivory tower, all that, but she was worried that 80% of infant mortality around the world is preventable. So in order to really understand that, she had to leave Harvard, get on an airplane, and fly up into this mountainous region in India that borders on Pakistan, and to live there for a period of time and to observe these young mothers and to see what lives. So wow. She could not have understood that from a lab or even from like, you know, talking to Indian women in the United States. She really has sight of the problem and really understand that. So that's almost every entrepreneur that is successful, they begin with empathy. you know, we'll usually build a prototype of some sort. And it's not necessarily a finished product. It's just something that I can show to you and you look at it and you say, yes, this is on track, or no, it's not on track, or yeah, I like this part, but I don't like that part. So it's really that you understand what the problem is and beginning to propose some solutions. And then based on that feedback, you go back and you iterate. So you develop and you design, and then you bring something else back, and you develop and design and bring something else back until eventually you bring back what's called a minimum. And so a minimum viable product, the purpose of that is not to get feedback. The purpose of that is to say, would you buy this? And if reach in their pocket and pull out their money, then you're not on track. You know, you still have to, you know, learn more. And then once you sell whatever that product is, now you have revenue. And revenue can cover a multitude of sins, right?
Yeah.
You know, once you're making money from this, now you can take that cash and put the cash back into more supplies, improvements, research and development, et cetera. And so we see it starting to turn. And eventually, you know, a lot of companies, they say, I want to grow fast, but I can't grow fast enough with the amount of capital. So now they have to go out and seek capital. They get venture capital or early angel investors. You know, they start with friends and family, then they get angel investors. And capital, and then they grow and scale their business, and often they will exit the business, or sometimes they grow it and just keep going. So that's a pattern that I've heard that story 300 times or more.
Yeah.
And I'll hear it again next week. I'm sure I will hear it. So these clues, we see people doing the same kinds of behaviors again and again and again, and getting the same kinds of results.
I love that story, by the way. I think the big picture in that, like you said, is it's being very, or learning how to be empathetic, I think is a big role, especially in my life. Because I defined this before, you know, the difference between sympathy and empathy. And, you know, sympathy is feeling sorry for someone, but empathy is really putting yourself in someone's shoes, understanding their problems, their circumstances, what their struggles, what they're going through. And you really have to immerse yourself like she did. She left, like, where she was comfortable at Harvard to go to somewhere to observe these people. And then, like you said, it left clues, like what she did, the journey that she went through. And it's really admirable. And thank you for sharing that, by the way. Your TED talk that you spoke about, you were talking about, you know, finding work with purpose. How does someone go about finding meaning in their work, whatever that may be?
Yeah. So let me just back up some context for that then, right? On average during a work week, we as Americans, and it's a little different around it, but it's basically the same. As Americans, 36% of the hours during a work week, we spend either asleep, right? And then another 37% of the hours during a work week, we spend either at work-related activities. So that means that more than two-thirds of the hours during the week are spent either asleep or at work. So if the way that you spend your time is the way you spend your life, then if you want to live a meaningful, have a life of meaning, a purpose, you have to learn to bring your work and your purpose together. And sometimes of discovering the purpose within your work. You know, somebody who is a janitor could say to themselves, oh, woe is me, I'm only a janitor, I were something else. Or they could say to themselves, you know what, I'm providing cleaning and sanitation and hygiene during a pandemic. It could be more important than that. Right? So
yeah.
Within each job, within each role, there is heart and meaning. The only question is the heart and meaning in that role with the thing that you want to do? So sometimes it is and sometimes it's not. So you have to find a place to do that. But what I found that there are basically four ways that people connect their purpose to their roles. And so sometimes what they sell or to whom they sell it. You know, you heard that interview with Sebastian at, I also talked to Stacy Flannery, and it's EVRNU. So Evernew take cotton materials and they break it down and they create a new fiber, which can be stitched and sewn and dyed into new material. And right now, if you took off a cotton t-shirt and you say, well, it's got a hole in it, I'm going to throw it away. Well, it's just going to go in the landfill. And take that old cotton t-shirt and they can break it back down to its original chemical components and rebuild it into a material that can be reused. You know, they have a contract with Adidas where they made some sportswear. They did a prototype with Levi's where they made some blue jeans, you know, kinds of stuff. And they are taking all of this waste out of the waste stream and they're creating new products out of them. So sell, the more of that they sell, the more cotton fibers they take out of the waste stream and the more that they have an environmental impact. They make a difference by what they source or how they source it. And so, you know, one example of that might, well, give me a second here. So somebody that I was thinking of with Fair Anita, and there's a woman named Joy McBreen, and I know that you heard that story, but Joy found women, especially in developing countries, that they can lift themselves out of poverty. And the higher poverty they come, the less likely they are to face abuse at home. And so there's this sort of correlation between revenue freedom from abuse at home. And so she sources her jewelry and scarves and other things from around the world from these women. And so she's employing like 8,000 women in 16 countries to make the materials and to make the jewelry that she sells by how you staff. And there's a, here in Minnesota where I'm at, there's a grilled cheese sandwich. Now it's called All Square. Now, first of all, you had me at grilled cheese sandwich, right?
Like, you know,
I love a good, but what they do is they hire formerly incarcerated people, so people who are coming out of the prison system, and they teach skills and they employ them and help them to come out of prison, to not have recidivism, not go back in, and then to get their lives back together. So how they staff makes a difference. And then what they share, and a couple of stories, one of them is called Spoonful Apparel. And Spoonful Apparel, Susan Elwer is the founder of it. What she did was she was at a school as a preschool teacher. And one of the other teachers said to her there at that table, this is the end of the first quarter of the school year. And that kid has not eaten lunch one time this entire school year. And just horrified, like, oh my God, I have to do something.
Yeah.
So the first thing she did was she went home and she packed a lunch for the kid, you know, but she said, I can't keep packing lunch different. So she started this t-shirt company called Spoonful Apparel. And for every t-shirt they sell, they give money towards feeding kids. People can find a way to make a difference by what they sell, by how they source, how they staff, or what they share. And so there are all the people can make an impact with their business and with their lives.
Yeah, there's so many different ways to, like you said, bring meaning to work. And, you know, you even brought it with the first story, the janitor and whatnot. But moving forward, being able to find, you know, more sustainable, eco-friendly resources from certain companies, different products, And I know in your TED talk, you mentioned like a statistic about like what, 66 million children who go to school being hungry and whatnot. You know, that it sets the tone for the day. Yeah. And like you mentioned, you know, the poverty level, and that's probably with the children who don't get enough food to eat. And it puts them at this level in life where it's kind of hard to overcome, and it's just another obstacle in their path. And it's all about breaking that cycle. And these people that you meet, these social entrepreneurs, these change makers, are finding more sustainable, environmentally friendly way, more beneficial ways of helping society as a whole. I actually interviewed quite a few podcasts ago, a close friend of mine who started a company known as Grow Cal. And it's an environmentally friendly company. He uses bamboo to make utensils that can be reused, cloths that can be reused, and a sustainable water bottle. And every month or every couple months, at least four times out of the year, I believe he does these beach walks. And he basically gets a crowd of people to come to this event where they help pick up trash on the beach, non-recycled plastics. And it's just very interesting to see how such a small group of people can make a huge impact.
And it is true that, you know, any one of us can make an impact, right, Andrew?
Yeah, it's very true. And I know that there's this topic about that I've discussed in a previous podcast. I'm really interested to hear your opinion, is this work-life balance. And I don't necessarily agree on the concept of what balance is, because I feel like you're always shifting to one side over the other. What's your opinion on this?
I think the phrase really should be work-life integration.
Oh, I love that.
I mentioned that statistic a while ago where I said, you know, two-thirds of your hours during the week are spent either asleep. And so if you aren't living a, air quotes here, life, you know, for two-thirds of your hours, what are you? Are you dead? You know, like work and life are two different things. You know, work is the thing that we do with our lives. And so, yeah, I think work is a much more powerful concept than work-life balance. Work-life balance sounds like work and life are different, but they're not. They are do with my life.
That work-life integration. I hope that's not patent, because I'm definitely stealing. I love that.
It's not even original with me. Somebody else has said it somewhere, and I'm sure I heard it in the ether. You know, one thing I think, Andrew, is I probably original thought, right? Like everything is out of the ether, it's out in the universe, and somebody has said something smart like that before, and I just sort of pick it up, and here it is.
Yeah, exactly. It gets redistributed and then recycled in just a slightly different way. That's basically how, you know, everything works in our universe. Yeah, I know, at least with you, I don't necessarily believe in luck. I think things, like you said, things have to be in motion for you to actually, can you repeat that one quote again you said about motion?
Yeah, I said miracle, you're in motion. And if you don't like the word miracles, you could say, you know, chances happen while you're in motion, or luck happens while you're in motion, or whatever. But I like that word miracle, this little surprise that happens that you don't even see coming.
Yeah, I love the word miracle. It's something about the word luck that doesn't sit well with me. I don't think anything can't happen by chance. But I don't know, I don't want to get the listeners confused here. But I know there is a difference between luck and intention. What would you say about that?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I do mention shapes the universe around us, right? So let's say that I intend to be able to retire. Well, then my intention drives my behavior. If I say I want to retire early, I have to save money early. I can't spend all my money. I can't overextend. So luck would be one day I woke up and ta-da, I retired early and it just happened. Well, that's not really the way it works, right? That we set an intention, that we put action behind that intention. It's sort of like the scripture that says faith without work versus day. You know, luck is really, it is intention with activities.
Intention with activity. That's a great way of putting it. I wish I could say you stole the words out of my mouth, but you didn't. That was a great way of saying that. They have this intentional path that they're going on. The opportunity is right in front of them. It can be anything that's, you know, helping this world in some sort of fashion, and they just can't find the means to sustain that work. Like how does someone maintain it?
Yeah. Okay. It's a great, one of the key concepts among entrepreneurs is this concept of pivot, right? That I'm going along in a direction back that from the marketplace that says, you know what, you kind of missed the mark just a little bit. And so you'll often see company to something nearby, right? So they'll start going down a path. And then eventually they're going to say, well, that path is not sustainable, so pivot just a little bit. But one of the things that people get confused about that concept of pivoting is they think that it's like today socks made out of recycled material, and tomorrow I am selling nuclear weapons as a defense. You know, it's like, you know, you don't make a leap. It's not about leaping from one state to another. It's really about finding one place where you have one foot on the ground and then pivoting to something nearby, something adjacent, right? So, and you see that all the time in businesses.
Oh, that's a great way of putting it. Definitely, you know, putting one foot on the ground, keeping it strong, and then pivoting anything that comes along your way. And like you said, that happens in business all the time, especially like, when I first started my own, I guess, small drop shipping business back way when there was a lot of struggles I went through and I didn't know how to maintain it. And for a lot of people who are starting their own business, which I hope is benefiting this plan in some fashion or another, it takes time. I think it's good to have patience and understanding and knowing that, you know, anything could go wrong at any moment.
Right. You know, I think if somebody said the other day that everybody who 5 years ago answered the question, where do you see yourself in 5 years, it wrong, because none of us saw ourselves in the middle of a pandemic, right?
Everyone so, got 100% of the population.
So probably true, you know, and you know, in the book Crazy Good Advice, I tell the story about these two guys who run a company called Earth Goods. And so it's like earth water, earth coffee, earth tea. And I think it's called the Earth Group. That's what it's called, the Earth Group. Back in the day, this was around 2008 when there was a financial meltdown, maybe the beginning of 2009. They were selling, but what they do is they sell a bottle of water and then they take 100% of their profit and they give it to the World Food Program. And so they make a difference by what they ship. But they had gotten a big contract, like they're originally from Canada. So they're, you know, they grew up in Canada and then into the US market. And when they came into the US market, they get a contract with Whole Foods. And so Whole Foods is just going to, they're just like, this is their breakout. Yeah. So they had a factory on the East Coast. They had a factory on the West Coast. They had a factory in Canada that was producing all this bottled water for them. And they got somebody who said, hey, something is going on in the East Coast. You might want to check with your supplier. They checked with the supplier and their East Coast bottler had gone because there's this big financial meltdown. And so their bottler on the East Coast went bankrupt. And they said, it's okay. We have a West Coast bottler. So they contact their West Coast bottler. They're bankrupt too. So they go, oh no. Well, that's okay. We have a big warehouse on the West Coast and it's full of bottled water. So we're just going to start selling that while we find another supplier. So they contacted the West Coast and that warehouse had gone bankrupt. But before they went bankrupt, they had sold all the products that the warehouse and then declared bankruptcy. So all of their stored bottled water was now gone. So they still have Canada. Reach out to their Canadian supplier. It turns out that they had a recall and that they brought all these, you know, leaking water bottles from their manufacturer, had to be recalled back to the warehouse, and the warehouse manufacturer with the warehouse, so they could not handle this big recall in the middle of a financial meltdown, so they went bankrupt. So all of a sudden, you have $750,000 worth of debt and no bottled water to sell and nothing to do. And so these two guys, they said, well, how did we start? We started by selling one case of water and we sold it out of the back of a van. So they got this old and they put some cases of water in the back of the van and they just started going down to little convenience stores and selling these cases of bottled water to get their cash. And they started traveling around the country doing this thing. They were literally like, they were sleeping in the van. They would stop at a Starbucks in the morning to check their Wi-Fi, get a cup of coffee, wash themselves up in the bathroom and get back in the van and hit the road again. And so these guys dug themselves back out of debt. And Whole Foods was very kind to let them out of the contract that they had. And so they recovered from that. And today they're selling, feeding kids all over the world with their World Food Program, like more than a million meals around the world because of the products that they, so they really had to find a way to just, you know, do we give up or do we just keep moving forward? And so, you know, with the Earth Group and so, you know, that's a great example. None of us expected to be in the middle of a pandemic, right? None of us situation, but you mentioned intention. And so what is my intention moving forward? What, how am I going to continue to move the needle even in the face of adversity?
Oh, that story, you and your stories. I'm genuinely really excited to read your book now. But yeah, intention, understanding your why. Most of the time when people, you know, falter, they don't really ask those deep questions that leads to like what their original intention was for their company, their brand, their purpose in life. And they just give up. Yeah. And that was a great story behind like their ambition and their intention with their company and then helping feed people. That's great. That's amazing. I'm really glad to hear that. That's a true real hero right there.
That's right.
Now, at what point do you, okay, so you can pivot and something goes wrong, but at what point do you draw the line to be like, okay, should I give up or should I let go? And maybe there's not a difference between the two.
Yeah. You know, so here's another example. There's a company called Seiko, and Liz Forkin Bohannon is a founder, and it's like Seiko, I think, Seiko Design. Mm-hmm. Anyway, she went to Uganda to help young women in education. That was her whole thing. She just wanted, you know, women's education. That was her thing. She had no idea what she was going to do or how she was going to do it. When she went to Uganda, she found a girls' school, and the girls' school was, you know, only had dormitories. And so what she said to the school was, hey, let me keep three girls here at the school during the week. And I want to work with them and see if we can figure out a way for them to earn money to go on to college. And so she's tried to start a chicken farm. So she got a bunch of chickens and she started trying to sell chickens, and it took her like about 30 days to no idea what I'm doing with the chicken farm. You know? And she just had to like get rid of the chickens, but then she had a little bit of cash. And so what she ended up doing was she sat down under a tree with some girls and some raw materials, and she made, And these girls started making sandals. And then what she did was they sat there all summer and they made sandals. She put these sandals in a crates and, you know, big tubs. And she flew back to the United States and she started having these parties where she would sell sandals out of the back of her car. And people would go, oh, you know, and she would tell the story of the girls that if you buy their sandals, they're going to go to school. That's how she launched this company called Seiko Design. You know, today she has, you know, hundreds of young Ugandan women are going to university. She does. It's an amazing growing company. They're out of, I think, Seattle, somewhere in the Northwest, maybe Portland. So they're out of the Northwest. Just, you know, Liz Forkin-Bahannon, her husband, her baby, they're all just, you know, like even her baby is cool, you know, like she's one of those kinds. And that's so, you know, she, but if you think about, she could have said, oh, I started a chicken farm isn't working. I don't know what I'm doing. I can't figure out how to sell chickens. I don't know what's going on here. And she could have said, oh, I tried a business. But instead, she came back to what's the need behind the need? What's the thing that I'm trying to accomplish here? So yeah, it's okay one thing and to begin something else. But you know, there's a saying, hold steady with the vision, but let the flexible. So if you think about, you know, if you're in a sailboat and you're going across a lake, well, the wind is gonna go this way and the waves are gonna go that way and you're gonna have to tack and you sail and all that. So the form might be really different every time you cross that lake trying to get to that destination on the other side. Same thing happens if you know, if you have run out of money, you're done, right? That's kind of the thing. Two things business. Number one is a disagreement among the co-founders. If the co-founders of a company have different visions for the company, if they have different work ethic, if one person wants to do very little work while the other person does a lot of work and they both want the same amount of money out of it, you know, those kinds of things can kill a company. Thing is running out of cash. So as long as you still have money and you still have the ability to move forward, then, you know, you can keep changing. You can keep moving in different directions until eventually you get to the place you're trying to go.
And that just goes back to your quote about, you know, miracles find you while you're in motion. It makes more sense with everything you're saying now, especially, you know, with money. Of course, it's easier to have a startup or a company that you want to expand when you already have money or investors and whatnot. But, you know, money will eventually become more abundant the more you put into your company, your vision, your mission. So I definitely think having that, you know, understanding helps push you forward in that aspect of your life. Do you think that having the mission outweighs your want, your need for money, if that makes sense?
That's a great question. I think that let's just take the mission away for a second. So to start a company, to come up customer who has a need, to come up with a prototype and get some feedback, to come up with a minimum viable product and get some money, to begin to own more of that product, to get your first 100 customers, to learn from them, to take that money and plow it into improvements, to grow that company. All of that's incredibly hard. If it weren't hard, everybody would do it, right? Now, when you say, by the way, we're doing this with this mission in mind, doubles the amount of effort, honestly. Now, it is true that you can attract employees work for you when you have a high mission. You can attract investors who want to invest in your company when you have a mission. You can attract customers. You can attract customers will pay more. So yes, having a mission is vital. It is important to have a company. You know, so let me back up for a second. Let me tell you this one more story here. The reason that the book Be Good Advice, it comes from this, one of my earlier podcast interviews. I interviewed a guy and his first name is Loon. If you want to hear something about being crazy and trying things, you have to ask a guy named Looney, right? And so is his name. And he runs an organization called Fledge, and they're an accelerator in the Seattle area. And now they have branches all over. He said, look, when you tell your family and your friends and your, you know, your wife and your kid and your, you know, the coworkers or whoever else it is, when you tell people that you're going to start a company and they tell are crazy, well, they're right. You're not right. They're right. They are right. You are crazy to do this because you have to be crazy to do something like starting a new company. But if you're going to go through the trouble of starting a company, you might as well have the big earth that you possibly can. And so that's where this whole title for the book came from, this crazy good advice. This is advice from people who are to not only make money, but money and a mission to make a dollar, but a dollar that makes a difference. So that's where that comes. So yeah, I mean, you do have to be just a little bit crazy to do this stuff.
Oh, that was a perfect way to sum up everything we basically discussed. I do think you have to be somewhat crazy. You know, every person I've looked up to, every person that I see now, peers, mentors, they're all a little bit crazy in their own way. And like you said, you have to be somewhat a little bit out there to start something like this. Because, you know, for those of you who, you know, have a science background, who like science, you know, the Big Bang, like that, just the thing about that, that's crazy within itself, you know, just the collision of particles and atoms just exploding, infinitely expanding. It's insane to think about. And the same thing with the business. You have to be, like I said, and like you said, a little crazy, a little out there, and a little enthusiastic, and maybe a little driven there with ambition and whatnot. But Tony, I really wish we could speak a little bit more, but I only have one last question here for you. And for anybody listening, or at least the people who are listening, they're coming from different backgrounds, different conditions. They might be winning or struggling in life, whether this be financially, physically, emotionally, mentally, and they want to transform an area of their life. And if one of our listeners came up to you and said, hey, Tony, I want to be better than who I was yesterday, what's one piece of advice you could give me?
You know, there's a concept called post-traumatic growth, right? And right now, the world is going out of trauma. So, you know, there's COVID-19, there's rampant racism, there is economic collapse, there is inflation, there are all these things. It's like we're at the intersection of all of these competing waves that are hitting us all at the same time. And so go through any kind of trauma, you can either be better or you can be bitter, right? So, and the thing that makes the difference, you're going to grow or you're going to break down, is your attitude. And so, you know, Viktor Frankl is this guy who wrote a book called For Meaning. And he went into the Nazi death camps. And his fiance went in, like his sister went in, everybody in his family was captured and thrown into this death camp. And on his way in, he was about to be captured. So he was writing his manuscript, his life's work, and he sewed it up inside the lining of his coat. And so they shove him on a train. He goes out here, gets to this camp, and they take him off the train. And the first thing they do is they strip his coat off and they throw it on a fire. And so his entire life's work went up in smoke. His family is all killed in these Nazi death camps. And yet he wrote this book, The In Search for Meaning. And in the book, he said, you can take everything away from a person except this one thing. And it says to choose food in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's own way. And so I would just say that's the primary for us today. It's about choosing your attitude. It's about choosing to say, yes, this is a traumatic time, but think of the story to tell when this thing is over. You know, think about how much we can change and grow. Think about the opportunities, you know, the word resilience is back. Well, what if we took resilience and we bounced forward instead? And so what would that new world look like? And so we haven't really rewrite the rules to come up with something brand new. And so choosing your attitude, that's the thing that's going to determine whether you post-traumatic breakdown or post-traumatic growth.
I loved the concept behind choosing. Something my stepmother told me every morning I got up out of bed for high school, you get to choose. Whenever I was incredibly sad or depressed or just didn't want to get out of bed just because he was going to school, of course. And she told me, Andrew, hey, you get to choose how you want to react, how you want to feel. You get to choose to be happy today. And I think, you know, like you said, you can take everything away from somebody, but they get to choose their own path. They get to choose their own way. They get to choose how they want to react to whatever is going on. And that is something that no one can take from you. No one can dictate how you think, how you do. You know, physically, mentally, it's really on you. And I thank you for sharing that. Thank you for sharing just everything on this podcast, with whether it came with the tools, the knowledge, the stories, which I loved, by the way. And I think the listeners will definitely love this as well. And just, I'm very grateful that I got the chance to speak with you today, Tony. So thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate being.
Yeah, of course. I live for these kind of moments, getting to hear different background stories. And it seems like you have 100 different people inside you. So it's like I heard 100 different stories today, which is, you know, you're living vicariously all through them. And I respect that a lot, and your mission. And, you know, moving forward, is there anywhere our listeners can go follow you, whether it's Facebook, YouTube, website? You know, I really want the listeners to, go along your path as well.
So the only tricky bit about finding me is my last name is spelled with. So my last name is Lloyd, and my last name is spelled L-O-Y-D. So it's TonyLloyd.com. And if you start at TonyLloyd.com on, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, wherever. If people want a copy of the book, they just go to TonyLloyd.com. There's a big green button right there, and you can grab a free electronic copy of it. Just click the button and download it, have it for free. It's a best-selling book. It's still selling on Amazon for like $19, but there's a free electronic version on my website.
Well, you can never turn down free stuff. But I'm old-fashioned the way my parents raised me. I love physical things. I love writing. When it comes to like technology, I'm like, you know what, I will write in an actual journal as opposed to, you know, using my phone or an iPad. And when it comes to reading, I have like a shelf full of books there that, you know, I'll reread again, but yep. Oh, there it is. Yeah. I cannot wait to read it. And I hope the listeners get to have a chance to read it as well. I'm very excited. I'll let you know what I think about it. And once again, thank you so much, Tony, for being a part of the Real Hero Podcast. And not only are the people you talked about real heroes, but you are a real hero yourself, and you uphold to that, and I really respect it a lot.
Thanks, Andrew. I appreciate it.
Well, that's a wrap, everybody. And once again, thank you so much, Tony, for being a guest on the Real Hero Podcast. Thank you for sharing your stories. Thank you for sharing what you've learned from interviewing many social entrepreneurs. And thank you for helping the listeners understand what a meaningful life is. And for those of you who didn't quite understand, please go back into the podcast and re-listen to the parts of when Tony was describing how to bring meaning to life, how to bring meaning to work so you have a more meaningful life, a life with purpose.
And I hope that everyone can understand to connect, contribute, and of course, give yourself self-love, self-care at the end of the day. We all want to make money, but let's find a way to make money while finding meaning and contributing. Now, don't forget to follow the Real Hero Facebook page at Become the Real Hero today. You can also follow my Instagram at Andrew D. Winters. I'm always posting new stories. I'm always engaging with my followers. And I would love if you can send a constructive criticism DM, whether it's something that you enjoyed about the podcast, something you learned, or something that I can tweak. I always look to strive to be the best version of myself, and that includes my podcast. All right, I hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Don't forget to stay safe, stay humble, but most importantly, stay being the real hero you are. All right, bye guys.
This has been the Real Hero Podcast.